us off and on, but we're here for the duration of the show, my show, and then I'm staying here. There is a Mass Auto Dealers Student Skills Competition that is going to be taking place while we're here, and that should prove to be real interesting. They have, I think, about 26 students. They're going to go around, visit various stations where they're going to be able to, they're going to be tested on certain things. Very similar to Skills USA for people who are a little bit older, similar to VICA, which is what Skills USA turned into. Or came from, I guess, that was the way to say it. But there's a lot of different things that they test and look at and try to work with. And it's a good show. They're going to be tested on a variety of different things, including things like resume work. You know, how they did putting their resume together. They're going to have two cars they have to investigate and figure out what's wrong with. Then they have some mechanical boards that they have to look at and try to figure out and make work. So there's a lot going on. And there's a representation from Hunter and Audi and Toyota and Subaru. They're all here. And Sullivan Tire, the good folks at Sullivan Tire, are here. In fact, even retired folks from Sullivan Tire. Chris Oxner, who I've known for 35 years or more, I guess. He retired from Sullivan Tire a couple of years ago, and he's here. So there's a lot going on, and the show itself is here. The car show is here. So I'm sitting sort of behind the Subaru display, which is behind the Audi display. So they have kind of the Audi all-wheel drive and Subaru all-wheel drives together. Genesis has a very nice display, so if you like the new Genesis vehicles that were formerly the high-end Hyundai vehicles. And then Infiniti, I can see within my view at least. And of course, Chevrolet and Ford and Chrysler and Jeep. On Thursday, I was here, and the Jeep Gladiator pickup truck is here. And the Jeep Gladiator pickup truck, I asked the head of RAM about that. I said, anybody not like that? And he said, no one with a pulse. So it looks a little too long. It's equipped as a four-door, comes as a four-door with a fairly short bed, a 5.5-foot bed, and it just looks a little longer than I would have expected it to be, I suppose. But it still was pretty interesting looking truck, and everyone loves it. In fact, in a little while, we're going to have our buddy George Kennedy. George Kennedy's been doing some work with the show and with Car Gurus, and he's going to stop in and see us if he can get through security and pay the parking fees and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, if you come into the show and you park, if you park at the parking lot at the convention center, it's $20, just so you know. Or you can valet if you want for $30. But there's a lot of different options. You can also come here and you can take the Silver Line here too. So you have a lot of ways to be able to get around and see what's here and see what's going on. It should be a great show. And I know from talking to the various folks at the different car companies, they're always happy to come to Boston. They did a press preview on Thursday for the Toyota, had quite the show set up. And Toyota's actually, one of the things they showed was they're coming out with a hybrid version of the Corolla. So if you've been trying to get 50 miles per gallon out of your Corolla, you'll be able to do it in a hybrid version. Also, if you've always loved your Prius and you said, you know, if it was just a little bit better in the wintertime, now they have an all-wheel drive Prius, which is pretty interesting. And then Honda showed their new Honda Passport, and that's an SUV that's sort of in between the CR-V and the Honda Pilot, so a little bit smaller. They sort of designed it for not people, not necessarily people with kids. They're really kind of going after the active lifestyle sort of Subaru-ish kind of customer, I guess. And it looks like it's nice proportion, where if you thought the CR-V was just a little too small and you thought the Pilot was a little too big, you had this mix. Now you have this choice as well. And I asked the guy from Honda whether they were, you know, based on coming out with a new SUV, are they abandoning the sedans? And they said, absolutely not. No, not at all. So there's a lot here. There's a lot of things that maybe you haven't seen before, and there are some beautiful things here, including, like I said, the McLaren display. Danny DeSantis from Boston McLaren has a bunch of McLarens here, including a Michael Fuchs car that is just an outrageous color, and I guess it might be an actual McLaren color, but it's an outrageous color. And then there's a special limited edition McLaren that's here. It's just stunning, and I think it's about $1 million car. George Kennedy knows more about that than I do, so when he gets in, we'll talk about that a little bit. If you follow me on Facebook, you may have seen George and I did a little Facebook Live tried to do it from the show. We actually did it from an Audi convertible. If you did follow that, you'll notice you probably didn't see me much. Some reason I got the other two guys. I got Jim and George in the video pretty well. But you know, just kind of a fun thing to do while we're at the show. There is also road tests going on at the show too. So if you want to go test drive the latest Volkswagen or test drive the latest Toyota, they actually have a little test drive. You can zip around the convention center. So you can check that out. So a lot of good things at the show. Just to let you know, like most shows these days and things, you do have to, security's a big deal, so you do have to go through metal detectors and all of that, just to be aware. But it should be a good show when it opens to the public. And I always like coming to things before they open, and I always steal the line from Paul Sullivan. It's always it's like a duck. They look all calm on the surface, but underneath the water, there's a lot going on. And that's just what the auto show's like. There's, you know, this convention center is, it's a big, big place. And you kind of look up, and you see people walking in the gangways near up to the top of the ceiling, and you don't realize how tall it is till you see how small they look. And so it's a big open space. If you haven't been to the convention center, it's worth looking at. And then when you go from here to the RV show, the RV show is pretty interesting too. So there's a lot of things to look at. I know we gave out every single ticket I have, including one set of tickets I inadvertently swapped an RV tickets for a car show ticket. And the folks at the show are going to take care of that person to get them into the show. But I think we gave out. Pretty sure we gave out 80, maybe we gave out 80 auto show tickets and about 40 RV tickets. And, of course, we gave out some flower show tickets, which is coming up shortly as well. So a lot of free tickets were given away based on the way people wanted the tickets. It looks like that's going to really an indicator on what the show is going to be like and what people think about it. So, if you want to call us, if you want to test out our phones, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Keith is on the board today. Dennis is down in Florida relaxing a little bit, somehow missing the snowstorm we're going to have. So I don't know how he planned that so precisely, but he managed to do that. So, you know, it is a good timing for him to stay away from the snow, because it looks like over this weekend, starting sometime tonight, we are going to have some snow. And depending where you live, if you're down on the Cape and the islands, you might get an inch or two of slush, I guess. If you're on the South Shore, you might get 2 to 4, 3 to 6. Boston, maybe 4 to 8. A little north and west of Boston, it looks like we're going to get a foot or more. And then it's going to get really cold. And with that really cold weather comes ice, and the roads get really slippery, so be careful. I know I did two interviews yesterday with Channel 12 in Rhode Island and Channel 6 in Rhode Island, and talked about how you should drive in the wintertime. And a couple things to always keep in mind. First off, drive slowly. Don't speed. This is not the time you want to speed. When the roads are slippery, the roads are snowy, absolutely don't want to do that. Then you want to be careful with your following distance. You want to make sure that you leave plenty of room between you and the cars in front of you. And if possible, always leave an escape off to either the left or the right. So don't, if you're out on the highway, don't be door handle to door handle with someone in the next lane. Try to find a little spot where you can slide off to one side if you have to. The other thing is, in bad weather, people tend to focus right in front of them, and that's not where you want to focus. You still want to keep your eyes way up, look way down the road, and we measure everything in distance these days. Years ago, anybody who ever took a driver's ed lesson, you heard you leave one car length for every 10 miles an hour out in the highway. And although that seemed like it worked, it didn't. And it wasn't enough distance. And now what we say is we measure that distance in time. So leave on a good day, leave 3 seconds of following distance. So when the car in front of you goes by a fixed object, it should take you about 3 seconds. You count out kind of to yourself, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. It should take you about 3 seconds to get to that same spot. In wintertime, you want to double that. You want to leave 5 or 6 seconds between you and the car in front of you. And you want to scan way down the road 20 or 30 seconds ahead so you can anticipate what's going on, so you can react to it and have plenty of time to do that. Even as good as cars stop today, it's the driver that you have to worry about, because it takes about a half a second to a second to react to something when it pops up. And then it takes about a half a second to a second to get your foot off the gas and on the brake. So now you've used up 2 seconds of following distance. So leave one more second for that margin of safety in good weather, and plenty of room when your car's not going to stop properly in bad weather. So you have a couple of things to look at and a couple of things to think about when you're out in poor weather conditions. The other thing is, it does look like we're going to get snow. And before you head out after it snows, make sure you fully clean all the snow off your car. In Massachusetts, there isn't a specific law about cleaning your car, but you are responsible to have good vision, and you're responsible when something blows off of your car. So whether it's you tied a mattress on the roof of your car and it fell off, or whether you allowed snow to blow off your car, if it causes damage to another vehicle, you are held responsible for it. So make sure you clean all the snow off your car. And also, I'm trying to think, the states that require it, Connecticut definitely does. Parts of New Hampshire, not the entire state, oddly enough, but southern New Hampshire does. Out in Pennsylvania, they do. For commercial vehicles, I believe. And I noticed that most of the federal, like the post office, for instance, requires, they all have their trucks go through like a scraper that actually scrapes all the snow off the top of the vehicle. So when they're heading out first thing in the morning, they don't have any snow on their vehicle. So it helps keep them all clean. So be aware of that if you are out. If you're up in the northern part of Massachusetts, southern New Hampshire, be aware that you could get ticketed when you cross over the New Hampshire border. Same thing if you're heading to Connecticut on Monday on the Martin Luther King holiday, and you're heading to Connecticut, be aware that, well, you could get a ticket for having snow on the roof of your car. So, and that's, I know it's a little tough with an SUV sometimes, that you know, a little hard to get to the roof of the car sometimes, but, you know, a good push broom will work, something called a snow broom, which is sort of the car equivalent of a roof rake. It's a block of styrofoam, probably 12 inches across and probably 6 inches tall. It's on a broom handle type thing. Drop it in the snow and drag the snow off. Drop it in the snow, drag the snow off. Push it off the other side if you want. I find it works really well dragging the snow off the car. You can clean off an SUV in no time with it. I managed to drag one out that it's had a rough life. I think I ran over the handle once, but it's something that just allows me to clean all the snow off my car and be able to take care of it without any real problems and without any real effort. So make sure it's as clean as it can be before I head out on the road. So because I want to try to be as safe as I can. And I always admit that I'm maybe not the safest driver in the world sometimes, but I try to pay attention to all the things around me and try to pay attention to the roadway and try to stay, reasonable with my speed when I'm out on the road. So that's what helps keep you safe. But the biggest thing is making sure that you're leaving that good following distance between you and the cars in front of you. When you're going 60 miles an hour, you're covering almost 90 feet a second. So when you take your eyes off the road for a second, when you take your thoughts away from driving for a second or two, now all of a sudden you've covered 180 feet. Do that for another second. Now all of a sudden you're close to 300 feet. So you need to pay attention. You need to be aware of everything that's happening around you to make sure that you're as safe as you can be when you're behind the wheel. Our phone number again, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Phone lines are open. You can you can talk to Keith when you call in. Say hello to him. I was kind of hoping we'd get a phone call from Dennis and have him tell us what Florida's like. He posted a picture on his Facebook page yesterday, and you couldn't see him. All you saw was he was definitely wearing shorts, and he was in a boat. So looks like he's having a pretty good time down there. And I think he went down on maybe Friday, I guess, or Thursday, and he's down there till Monday, coming home on Monday. So he can come home just in time to shovel, or shovel what's left of the snow if it doesn't melt by Monday. So our phone number again, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030, and phone lines are open. You can call in, and we can talk to you about whatever you have on your mind about cars and car problems. The show is starting to come alive here. People are walking around with walkie-talkies and checking out things and making sure things are okay. It's kind of interesting where I am in the student auto skills area, which is right behind a big Genesis display. It's all curtained off with a bunch of blue curtains, and I'm on sort of the one of the little spaces I set up in. There is a tuk-tuk. There are two of them, actually, and they're little three-wheel vehicles. You see them in India, for instance, and other places, and I believe they're called tuk-tuks because that's sort of what they sound like when they're running. And these are both set up as cargo vans, single-seat cargo van, and they're actually coffee trucks. And they have hot coffee. They're selling today. It says fuel up. Hot coffee, cold brew, some other kind of cold brew. $5.50. Wow. $3.50 for the normal hot coffee. And they're all set up. They actually have a little sink where they can rinse things off and get their coffee all ready and get all made. So they're really kind of a neat looking little vehicle, and set up as a coffee truck makes it kind of interesting. And I have no idea what that noise is, by the way. That sounds like a shorted out speaker in one of the display systems that all of a sudden pops up. So there are all those things going on, and at some point we might even get to talk to the folks that are maybe even putting the auto show together, but also putting this event together. Hey, if you own a Chrysler with an eco diesel in it, so a Chrysler product, so it could be a Jeep. Could be, I suppose, it could be, but it's probably a 1500 series or a Jeep Grand Cherokee with a 3-liter diesel in it from 2014 to 2016 are covered in a class action settlement. And it says this comes from Class Strategies, I guess. So it's a $305 million class settlement with Fiat Chrysler. Bosch will compensate owners and lessees and provide repairs to protect the environment while maintaining performance and fuel economy. A class action settlement agreement filed, January 10th by consumer plaintiffs in the Fiat Chrysler Dodge Jeep Eco Diesel litigation will, if approved, provide eligible owners and lessees with substantial payments. So I haven't heard if this has got approved yet, but it's going pretty far. In addition to government-approved emissions modifications and extended warranties, the proposed settlement totaling $307.5 million, $280 million from FCA and $27 million from Bosch, was filed in the U.S. District Court, North District of California, as part of a multi-district litigation. Ram 1500 and Jeep Cherokee 3-liter diesel vehicles from 2014 to 16 are covered under the settlement. The Environmental Protection Agency and California Air Resources Board will approve emissions modifications and will bring these vehicles into compliance with standards to which they were originally certified without materially reducing advertised performance or fuel economy. they can do it now, why couldn't they do it then? Under completion of the repair, upon completion of the repair, which consists of a software change, a class member will receive a cash payment. The amount will vary depending on whether the class member is a current or former owner or lessee. For example, an eligible owner who owned the subject vehicle on January 12, 2017, which is the notice of violation date, and completes the repair will receive $3,075. An extended warranty will also be provided that covers all the parts and systems affected by the emissions modification. By holding FCA and Bosch accountable for their diesel emissions cheating, consumers will now receive the vehicle they were promised, plus cash compensation while protecting the environment. We'll have to see how far this goes. At the bottom it says we look forward to presenting a settlement to the court, and once approved, ensuring eligible vehicle owners and lessees take advantage of the benefits. We appreciate the guidance provided by Judge Chen. He's the judge that's presiding over this. In the settlement matter, Kenneth Feinberg and efforts of the Department of Justice, EPA, and California Attorney General's and CARB offices, former owners of lessee who sold their vehicle after that January date can also file claims to receive a portion of the total cash back. So even if you don't own it anymore, you might get some money back. Under consent decrees with the Department of Justice on behalf of EPA and CARB that are intended to be implemented in conjunction with the class action suit, FCA will pay penalties for violation of Clean Air Act. So the settlement is subject to court approval. A preliminary approval hearing is scheduled for next week coming up. When and if the court grants preliminary approval, the claims process will open to class members. The court will hold a final approval hearing approximately 3 or 4 months later. So if you own one of these and you own it now and you're thinking about selling it, well, you could do that. You'll still get your money back. But something to think about. The other thing, the all-new Kia Telluride made its debut at the Detroit Auto Show. And the Telluride is a really, it isn't here, but it's a real interesting vehicle. It's a big SUV, the largest Kia ever. It can seat up to 8, probably mostly configured to seat 7, probably 2 bucket seats, and a 3-row bench. But it's powered by a 291 horsepower, 3.8 liter V6. It has available active on-demand wheel drive, and it's a pretty boxy looking vehicle. So it's big and boxy, and they say they did it on purpose. They built it that way to try to maximize the interior room. So it's also a big roomy vehicle inside, and not quite the same aerodynamics. And similar to, and I said that to the national person from Honda, I said, yeah, the new Passport's a little bit boxy. And I said, was that done to try to maximize the interior space? And I didn't like it, but it really does kind of bring the new look. So really kind of interesting and fun to look at, and all these new cars are real interesting. So again, that new Kia Telluride is powered by a 291 horsepower V6. It delivers about 260 foot-pounds of torque. It's got a ton of technology. But now we're seeing that in just about all the vehicles. We're seeing an awful lot of technology. Even today, I'm driving a Kia Forte, which, you know, you think about the Forte, it's a pretty basic vehicle, simple. You'd think of it as competitive with a Toyota Corolla or maybe a Honda Civic. Lane departure warning, blind spot warning, cross traffic alert. So if you're backing up between two big SUVs and there's somebody coming down the lane, it lets you know that that's happening. So there's a lot to be said for, you know, some of this new technology. The Kia Forte, and I can't imagine there's any option missing in the one that I'm driving. It has a power moonroof, heated front seats, all kinds of stuff. So there's lots and lots of stuff. So why don't we take a quick break? Keith, can we take a quick break? All right, why don't we take a quick break? When we come back, a good-looking guy sauntering up to the table here. George Kennedy. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Love, she said, I don't want your Chevrolet. I don't want your Chevrolet. I don't want nothing in the world you got. No, you can't do nothing for me. You can't do nothing for me. I buy you a diamond ring. I buy you a diamond ring. I buy you.
Level one compression. Listen to him talk. My 426 superstar.
Tackle the dash at the cheater slits.
Superstar.
She's hiding when doesn't miss a lick.
Superstar, superstar.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. Good music pick there, Keith. Yeah, so we actually have sort of a in-studio guest, I guess you would say, as soon as Keith finishes up with the music. Oh, there we go. We have our buddy George Kennedy. George Kennedy's been on the program before.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
Good, good. Got me out of bed early.
I know. Well, yeah. Was that by design? Did we?
It's better than an alarm clock to be like, hey, you got to go be on the radio.
Well, you know, that's good. And you were staying local last night, right?
Yeah, I live in Jamaica Plains.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I live about a half mile from the Lars Anderson Auto Museum.
Oh, all right.
Which everybody should go to.
I agree. I think the Lars Anderson Museum is a, some people are going to go and expect, you know, something gigantic. But it's not.
It's like going to, instead of going to a massive bar with like 30 lines on tap, it's like going to a place that's got like a well-curated selection of like 6 to 10 beers.
That's an interesting way to look at it. Do they have like Bud Light there? Probably not.
You know, there might be a Ford Taurus rolling around.
But it's Lars Anderson's a great place to be because it's, every time I walk in there, and I look around and look at how the building was built and think that that's where they kept horses.
Right. You can still see, if you go into the back, you can still see the names of all the stables.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was interesting because it was the transition for them. It was, they had owned horses and carriages, and as the automobile became in vogue, and it was, I mean, the first automobiles were like the Teslas of the day. It was the thing to own if you were well-heeled. Yeah. So, well-heeled horses. So literally as
that's a good comment. That's a good comment from somebody from 1941.
Yeah. So as they transitioned out to cars, they started removing a lot of the carriages and stuff. It's still considered a carriage house.
Yeah.
Right now they're doing hot rods of New England. When you think of hot rod, you might think of like the Cali and the beach and stuff like that. But you know, New England hot rods have their own sort of sense of function over form. There's less chrome, a little more primer, and it's all about functionality.
Yeah. Although, beautiful cars, though.
Oh, yeah. There's, you know, it's not just the basic cars. There's some incredible art cars there, too. There's some designers that have been doing some really cool stuff. So there's a little bit of everything over there. There's an Allard J2X over there, which is like, it's almost like one of those like Grand Prix cars with like the open wheel, but it's got a massive Chrysler engine in the middle.
That, you know, that was one of, you know, whether it was, I think I kind of missed those days of like the Jensen Interceptor with the 440 Chrysler in it.
You had these British bodies, British chassis, and then like these just hulking American engines.
Yeah, I always thought that was sort of fun and, you know, just kind of interesting. Although I guess similar, Sterling tried it with Acura, right, or Honda.
Is that
Remember
right?
The Sterling. The Sterling was basically an Acura legend, but it was built by Sterling, so different body.
Okay.
But it used an Acura drivetrain.
So, all right. So even of the Allards, I think the one in the museum is a Sterling, so even a shorter run.
Okay.
But then you look at like the TVR Griffith.
Yeah.
Like the car is like barely larger than a Mini, but it's got a 427.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, I look back at the Sterling, and so you had this really robust bulletproof drivetrain, you know, the Acura V6 with their transmission. The problem is they used English electronics.
The ghost of Lord Lucas.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so it was sort of, if they just left the Acura wiring in it, it would have been fine. But yeah.
They had to take out like the most, you know, rock solid part of that car and replace it with like the British electronics, which are just notorious.
Yeah. No, there was a dealer up on Route 1 somewhere, and I don't remember who it was, but he always had these, you know, whatever he sold, and I don't know if it was Plymouth Chrysler or something, but he always had this other line. Uh-huh. So it was, you know, Sterling or TVR or something.
It's great when you just, those importers that would just have like really random things around. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like looking at the stuff that that never made it. You know, there was an SUV that was I can't even remember the name of it now, but it was made in someplace. It had sort of it claimed to have some sort of Ford Cogsworth design engine in it, and it was most of them caught fire. You know, it was
great.
Yeah, it was the importer was up in Maine. I remember that, and it was it looked like a really rugged, you know, built in, you know, some, you know, Eastern Bloc country, and it but they said, "Oh no, it's a Ford, you know, Ford drivetrain."
Really?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, it had some semblance of it somewhere, I guess.
Well,
but
to bring it full circle, Lars Anderson does a lot of lawn events, and one of the last ones of the year, one of my favorites, is Orphan Car Day.
Oh, okay.
So it's any defunct car brand. So, unfortunately, in the last, you know, 15, 20 years, we've had some additions to that,
right,
like Pontiac and Mercury and whatnot. So some might argue that Buick belongs there.
The Chinese company, right? Buick?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's just so funny. That car brand wouldn't exist without China.
Yeah.
And yet, now that they have a large enough industry, they're going to build their own cars, and Buick has no purpose.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a shame, because I remember being at some place where who was it? Bob Lutz was there.
Okay.
And he said, and I think the question was, this was actually before he was chairman of General Motors. And the
but
question
he was still taking credit for other people.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he does.
Yeah. Woke up on third, thought he hit a triple.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But the question to him was, you woke up tomorrow morning and you're president of General Motors. What are you going to do? And he said, get rid of Saturn.
Which is silly, because they were building their best cars at that point. That was their best product portfolio.
Yeah, but they were Opels, so.
That's fine. Yeah. But they were still compelling cars near the end.
Yeah. He said, get rid of Saturn. It doesn't make money. He said, I don't care what they tell you. It doesn't make money. He liked Pontiac, but he didn't think Pontiac would survive. But what he really wanted to do was take Buick and move Buick to an equivalent of a Lexus. So, really, a quality car like a Lexus with quality interiors.
What does that do to Cadillac, though?
Move Cadillac way up, so Cadillac competes with the best luxury cars in the world.
Well, that did not happen.
It did not.
No.
It did not. But if it looked like Buick was heading that way for a while, I mean, there was some pretty, you know, the full-size Buicks were pretty good.
Yeah, well, here's the problem. So, I'm driving a Kia K900 this week as a press car.
Yep.
GM all but gave, all right. They wrote out their wins without adapting all through the 90s and 2000s. They kept making these barges with, you know, and relying on the octogenarians that are driving them around Boca and riding them literally into the grave. So, you know, when they die off, I hate to say it, who's going to buy those cars? Nobody. And then they pivot.
If there's one with low miles, I might be interested in it. Used.
But when they go to pivot to a younger buyer, nobody, you know, that's younger wants to buy cars that has that sort of brand image. There's no, you know, Volvo is still doing its image rehab, and now they're making great cars. But there's not, you know, GM isn't doing it with Buick or Cadillac.
Yeah, and Cadillac, I mean, I don't care who you are. At some point, whether you used terminology, you know, you got Cadillac style with the Chevy budget kind of thing, or that's the Cadillac of something or other. It's not anymore,
right?
And that's,
it lost that luster, and the problem is, like, they don't know what it is. They don't know what they're they don't know what they want to do. I was just out of the Detroit show, and they just announced the XT6, which is about the size of a Buick Enclave, a little bit shorter than a Chevy Traverse, and it's okay. It's nice. It's a car they needed because SUVs are red hot, but it's a car that's 2 years too late to market. Everybody that was going to buy a car like that has already purchased, you know, a Lexus GX or something like that.
Yeah.
And the problem with it is, just like how General Motors and all the American automakers, for that matter, like, begrudgingly, through gritted teeth, built small cars for the 70s and 80s. They're like, okay, fine, I guess we got to do it. The imports are doing it. They did the same thing with small SUVs.
Yeah.
This red-hot market that's the fastest-growing market in all of the auto industry, and Chevy goes, no, we're going to focus on sedans. And when they finally do bring something to market, the XT4 and the Chevy Trax, these are cars from, like, the Indonesian market. The Chevy Trax is an Indonesian car that they slapped on a new interior and got it ready for the first world.
And I drove a Trax probably about 150 miles.
A lot of
it was stuck in traffic.
Okay.
It was the most uncomfortable car that I, you know, the seats were just short, they had no support, they were just, it was just, my wife couldn't wait to get out of the car. She's like, this is the worst car ever. And you know, the best thing about the Trax and its kind of Buick twin, the Encore, is you can lease them for like $1 a month or something.
And you can tow them behind a recreational
vehicle. Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah,
they used to be, before we were talking about this, even before the redesign of that car, they were two-tone, so it was like tan and brown.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, so it would match the colorway of like a big RV.
Well, that's, you know, maybe.
if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. No, but I know a couple people who have bought the Buick Encore because it was $129 a month and $3,000 down.
Oh, yeah, they were putting some good deals on it.
Yeah.
Now, do they regret that?
No.
They did some nice things to soften that car out.
They couldn't afford kind of what they wanted. But they said, hey, brand new, with technology in it, it's worth looking at.
Right, and the thing is, like I've said, that Buicks have pretty like nice interiors. Like that's the thing, I'm not besmirching GM for not making good products. Some are not good products. Trax.
Yeah.
But Buick, we were overlooking at the Regal Torx, that all-wheel drive wagon, kind of competes with like a Volvo cross-country wagon. That's a really nice car. That's one of the best cars that they have, but Buick has put that in the corner. And once again, it's almost like they're promoting their best cars through gritted teeth. Like they almost like they're like, okay,
Have you seen a Buick Torx or whatever they call it advertised on TV at all?
I don't think so.
No.
And they do the whole. I don't know if we have enough radio time for me and GM advertising.
We got 45 minutes.
Perfect. So the whole like, oh, is that a Buick campaign?
Yeah.
I'm like, that actually applies to more like Kia and Hyundai.
Yeah.
Like the K900 I'm driving right now. That's like a, wow, that's a Kia. That's impressive. The thing that's just awful is the Real People Chevy ads.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Are they real people?
They supposedly are, but they go through like 3,000 like machinations of focus groups until they find the ones that say what they want to hear.
Oh, okay.
The other thing is this. It was one thing when they were just taking their own cars and being like, would you guess what the most award-winning cars are? And then lo and behold, they reveal and it's a Chevy. And like, oh, I would have never guessed that. But they went a bridge too far and they were like, hey, you're a Honda owner. What do you think is the most award-winning car? And it had a Honda logo on the thing and they pulled it off and it was a Chevy.
Yeah.
And then immediately, Honda and Toyota go, not so fast, my friend. And they're like, all these awards you're saying are like, you know, oh, you won an award for like reliability for like the best windshield wipers in 2007, and you're moving on to that. They aren't real quality awards. They are cherry picking their own focus group stuff and say award winning. So, you know.
So you're calling shenanigans on the whole thing?
Oh, I'm calling definite shenanigans. I'm calling Irish step dancing shenanigans, all right? So the problem is this, is you don't see Honda doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see Toyota doing it. And they're class leaders for quality.
Right.
They're not punching down. Anytime a brand is trying to do comparisons within their advertising, it invites this sort of criticism. They go, well, no, we can kind of own you on that. So, and it's just, Chevy has this weird, I've always said it, this weird duality of paranoia and hubris. I think Bob Lutz has it. I think, you know, it's definitely the 2000s that was going on. So it's, you know, this won't be the rant on Chevy hour, but like, it's a weird.
Well, it was funny, way back when, John R. White.
Oh, yeah.
The famed auto writer of the Boston Globe was at a press event, and it was the same event that, I don't know, Chrysler introduced the K car or some horrible thing. But it was but it was inexpensive. It was like, you know, $4,000 or something, $5,000.
That saved them,
so,
by the way.
Yeah. So he asked the then president of General Motors, how do you compete against that? And he said, well, you buy a used Buick.
Your listeners can't see me eye rolling right now. Great example. The last time I think it was some Chevy midsize SUV. Could have been the Equinox.
Yeah.
Some unlovable pile of what. We go in there, we're asking, we're like, so what did you benchmark? You're off, and a lot of brands that are sort of looking to reinvent their image will often say, look, these are the cars we benchmark. We said Lexus RX 350.
Right.
That's what. What does Chevy say? We benchmarked the previous version of this vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, what? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, speaking of, we'll stop bashing GM, I guess, for a while. While we were here on Thursday, Honda introduced their new Passport. They brought out an old name.
Yep. Their first SUV was the Passport, right?
Questionable origin. It was an Isuzu.
Right, Isuzu Rodeo, correct?
Yeah. It was not a fantastic car. Rodeo, yeah. But the new Passport, kind of halfway between a CRV and a Pilot, nice proportions.
They're saying it's between a CRV and a Pilot, but edging closer to Pilot.
Yeah.
It has the V6 out of the Pilot. It has the torque vectoring, all-wheel drive, never gonna use it. But, I know my parents like to drive on the beach, and they'd want an SUV that has ground clearance and the ability to drive on a beach. That vehicle would satisfy that without it having to be, like, a Jeep or something, right? I think it's smart that the, automakers are going after any blue water that's possible,
right?
We always lament, the Germans for creating all these vehicle classes of, five-door, mid-size sport sedan with a fastback, but somebody wants to buy money, pay money for that car.
There's like three people.
Except they redesigned each one of those cars, which means there was enough buyers to justify a
Well, I guess like the X4.
X4,
which
exactly,
was a GT before that. Wasn't that the, was that?
There was the Grand Touring.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 5 Series Grand Touring.
Yeah.
So like they almost punch up a sedan into like a crossover and they take a useful SUV and chop off.
I know when I wrote the review on the X4, I said, this is probably not a car for everyone, but maybe that's the point. It's a car that, you're going to say, I don't see a lot of those on the road. It's different. It's not the most practical. As a hatchback, it's got some sort of limited space in the back.
It's really limited, But you know what? Enough people bought it to justify a second generation. And that kind of says something to me. Yeah. But, in a more practical sense, you look at the Hondas of the world, and they're saying, Nissan does a in-between. There's, the Murano sits in between the Rogue and the Pathfinder. Let's make something that's on that same level.
Yeah.
That's who they're benchmarking.
Yeah.
Also Ford with the Edge.
Yeah.
Similar size vehicle. Those other two seem a little bit larger than the Passport.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think of the new Nautilus, the Lincoln Nautilus, which is sort of a Ford, when you said Ford Edge, it reminded me of
Right. Yeah. I haven't been behind the wheel of one. They look sharp.
Yeah.
The new Lincolns look good.
Yep. They do. They're here.
I've driven the new Navigator. Wow.
I'll tell you a story about that later. Yeah. And there's cars here at the Boston Auto Show that weren't in Detroit, right? I mean, there's no BMW in Detroit.
Yeah, you're right. There were some big omissions this year in Detroit.
Was Audi
BMW,
was
Audi, and Mercedes were not there.
So you can see one of your favorite Audis here, right?
What's that? What were we sitting? We were sitting in the A5.
Well, that's
we were
one
doing
of my
Facebook Live.
That's, yeah, that's one of my favorite convertibles.
Yeah.
But the hot rod two door here.
Oh, the R8.
Yeah, R8 with the V10 in it.
Car.
Yeah.
You know what's cool is that you can find first couple year ones of those with the V8 and a manual, for $70,000.
Oh, so that's still way above my budget.
No, but it's I hate to say it, but it does the same thing that. And older NSXs used to do before they matured market wise, where you could find one for $30,000-$40,000. And you're like, that's a supercar.
Yeah.
It has only has a V6, but it's a supercar.
Yeah, no, the NSX, I drove one for probably a day or two. It was, I think we had one at the Ragtop Ramble once.
Oh, really?
And
the new one of the new ones or the
no,
older
one of the
90s?
Old one? One of the old ones. And I really liked driving it, but I was somewhere on Cape Cod. And there was a guy driving down the street, and he was accelerating to about 60 or 65 on low-speed roads, and the roof fell off.
Whoops.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and I kind of pulled over and helped him put the roof, you know, pick the roof back up. It didn't look so good, so.
Yeah. Was it the modular, like, hard top with the convertible?
Yeah,
was it,
yeah.
And there was a convertible soft top below that?
No, I don't, maybe not. Maybe it was just like a removable panel.
See, because here I was about to be like, you know, the NSX is the car that forced Ferrari to make more reliable cars.
Yeah.
And then that happens.
Yeah.
But in a lot of ways it did. They said, look, a supercar doesn't have to be this, like, thing that, like, pains you to get inside. You know,
right.
It can be comfortable. The controls can be where they're supposed to be, like in a regular car. You know, it can be exotic while still having normal.
The NSX pained me to get inside a bit, but yeah. But once I was in, it was good.
Everything, it's so ergonomically sound.
Yeah.
Which I know is not what you're looking for in a supercar, but
if you got to drive it.
Yeah. It makes a daily drivable supercar.
And there's a new NSX here.
Yeah, and it's a hybrid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can the same hybrids or similar hybrid setup to like the all-wheel drive MDX and the TSX, I want to say.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of your favorite cars, the McLaren's here, huh?
Oh, my God. The McLaren Senna. So just so your listeners know, if they're not aware, Ayrton Senna was like a famous F1 driver in the late 80s, early 90s. He died at Monza in like 94 or 5.
Something like that.
Yeah. But he was a McLaren Honda driver. So McLaren chassis, Honda engine. And, you know, that, you know, McLaren, you know, named its latest track-ready supercar the Senna. And the one that's here is painted like his car from, like, the early 90s.
Yeah.
Really cool. That car is, like, a crazy track car. It goes, like, you know, 0 to 60 in, like, 3.9 seconds or less. But more than straight-line power, it's built to rip up tracks.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the P1, but it has all the hybrid stuff removed, so it's just a track machine.
Yeah.
But it's road legal.
Yeah.
It looks like a spaceship on wheels. And it's the most expensive car here.
All the McLarens, even their bargain basement $300,000 McLaren, looks like a spaceship.
You know, people talk about how Tesla came out of nowhere, and, you know, now they're doing their thing. McLaren, outside of the F1... which the 1994 McLaren F1 is my favorite car of all time, they hadn't made a car in years.
Yeah.
And then they come out with the MP4 12C, which became like the 570.
Right.
And now they have a lineup of like 5 supercars.
Yeah.
And I know some well-heeled folks in Boston that have owned them, and they love them. They're like, much like the NSX, it's a livable, daily drivable supercar.
Yeah, every time I'm in Boston and I see one kind of driving around the local streets, it amazes me because it's like, here's this fantastic car. I feel a little bad when they're driving through the streets of Cambridge with it, but but still, and it has a very unique exhaust sound.
It's this incredible, like throaty snarl.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I know it might sound like there's like a tin can kind of being kicked around, but like if you spend enough time around a racetrack, that you're like, that is a race car sound. Right
there. It's somewhere between high performance sport bike exhaust and muscle car. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, you're right, because they're small displacement V8s.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're twin turbocharged, and so you get like that kind of blow off sound too.
Yeah.
The craziest sound I've heard in a car in the last couple of years, and a lot of that car is manufactured. That sound, the Jaguar F-Type SVR.
Okay.
It was the only car that I was afraid I was going to get a ticket going under the speed limit because a cop would just assume I was speeding from that sound. It was every time you lay off the throttle, it had that snap and pop and that you know, bringed it in.
I remember when that car, when the Jaguar F-Type came out, and Stuart Shore, who's now the head of Jaguar Land Rover Public Relations Worldwide or something,
I don't know, whatever
his job is. He, by the way, he used to deliver cars
for
Fred McElroy. At one point.
Really?
Yeah. And it kind of makes sense because Stuart's father, Marty Shore, Marty ran the Buick side of public affairs back then. And a lot of things went together. Marty still does a really interesting kind of cars and coffee sort of, or guys that like cars that go to lunch. And he has some really exotic cars.
Is it the Blue Plate Special of
down in Lake Sarasota. But he also has a pretty, he's for a long time, he was hooked up with Baldwin Motion cars.
I've heard of Baldwin.
Yeah, Baldwin Motion back in the 70s built some very exotic cars out of a little kind of dealership in New Jersey. And And they did some crazy modifications to everything from mostly Corvettes and Camaros and mostly Camaros to even they did a Baldwin Motion dune buggy.
Oh, wow.
So high performance, cool looking. But Stuart, he said to me when they first did the F-Type, he's like, here's a car that really wears its heart on its sleeve. You know, this is it. You see everything there is with this car. It's loud. It's a little bit obnoxious. kind of Corvette-ish. They kind of likened it to.
Yeah, I mean, short rear deck, long hood. Yeah. I mean, it's just the perfect sports car proportions. It's, you want to talk about a brand that has reinvented itself.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the XJ was the same car for damn near 30 years.
Yeah.
And then they went and made this incredible, almost spaceship-looking car. And then they went top to bottom with their lineup. I mean, that E-Pace.
Yeah.
I see those everywhere now.
Yeah.
You think Jaguar SUV. It's funny because they're going to make Jaguar SUVs and they're going to talking about making Land Rover like crossover wagons.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's all coming to this like automotive singularity.
Yeah, I know. Sort of interesting. I think we have a phone call. Let's see what happens. Oh, it's our buddy Rick from Boston. Rick, is that you?
Yep, that's me.
All right, there you are.
Yeah,
what's
up
this morning? What's where are you?
The conversation, but I got a question for you.
All right, go ahead.
With this government shutdown, what effect have they had on automotive safety and all the other areas with the government shutdown taking place right now?
I don't think it's had a lot of effect. I know that a friend of mine who is the Region 1 director for NHTSA is still working. So
right?
Yeah, so if he's still working, I guess I never thought of him as being essential, but
I'm sure he'd love to hear that.
Yeah, sorry, Art. I don't know. I mean, I think it's different than as far as automotive testing. I would, NHTSA, you look at DOT crash testing, and I don't believe that there's been any issues with cars being delayed because they haven't been crash tested, because most of the crash testing happens at the dealer level, I mean at the manufacturer level anyway. So I don't know that that's been a problem. It's not like the beer manufacturers that are coming out with a new microbrew and they can't get the...
I was listening to that. They couldn't get their label approved or something like that. Yeah.
So
And then look for fuel economy regs. A lot of times, and this is obviously I would consider a highly suspect methodology. A lot of them do their own testing and then submit the results.
Right.
Which
and
the
idea
problematic
is,
in of itself.
Yeah, and the idea is it gets spot checked afterwards. So I think from the automotive side, Rick, I think I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think anything's really happening. I'm more concerned about TSA because I'm flying Wednesday night, so
just get. I had to fly out for the Detroit show, and I just got there early. It wasn't too bad. Do you have TSA pre?
No.
You got to get on that, man.
I don't fly enough.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I what George mentioned, they have pre-check, which is which you can pay $100 for.
It's $100 for 5 years.
For 5 years,
they interview you. They make sure you're all set,
yep.
And you don't have to take your shoes off, which is great for me.
Yeah. The last few times that I flew, I got pre-check anyway. I don't think I've gone through a regular security line in the last 4 or 5 times I flew.
So you mean I didn't have to pay the $100?
Yeah, $20 a year. It's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
So, if I did it, I would have to pay $200 because I have to pay for my wife too. So.
Well, so that's the funny thing is, all right, here's a little one for you though. But if you get it, oftentimes your travel partner automatically gets it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so I was flying with my girlfriend last spring. We were going out to New Orleans, and it was the first time I had had it, and I was very excited to use it. And I'm like, look, honey, if I get it and I go through and they don't give it to you, please don't hold it against me when I run through the fast lane, and I'll meet you on the other side.
Well, it's funny. My wife and I think we're flying out of Providence, and I had it, and she didn't.
Oh,
she got through the line quicker than I did because somebody was in the pre-check line and was taking their belt and shoes and stuff off. And I'm like, and the TSA guy comes up, no, you don't have to do that. And he, has his, plastic bag out.
I was
going
to say, how old was this guy?
Not old.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
so just oblivious, has never flown before?
Yeah, apparently. I don't know. Because I want to say he was probably in his 30s, maybe?
Yeah. So I definitely know I travel too
and,
much.
And a business, and I would guess a business guy, because he looked like he had, you know, junk with him that you would take on a business
yeah,
trip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I can tell you that I think when you reach the era of, you know, you've traveled too much when, like, you start complaining about stuff like that, and you're like, oh, the people that don't know how to travel, yeah. You know, they yeah. don't know how to pack, yada, 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 four ounces, what the heck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I...
Every time I see somebody who's going on vacation and they have 12 bottles of expensive shampoo with them.
And you it's know, all going and, in the trash.
Yeah, and they're big, and they're like, you know, real, and you know, and there's somebody going, but that's $150 worth of shampoo. You
too
know.
Bad. Read
yeah.
the flyer.
Yeah, I know.
I tend to, if I see somebody like in leisure wear of any kind, I tend to avoid them because I'm like, this might be the only time of year that you travel, so I'm going to steer clear of you.
there was a woman, and I know we're talking travel, but there was a woman who literally was dressed like the Wicked Witch of the West. I mean, all black, long skirt, hair done up like a foot high,
mm-hmm.
wearing something wrapped around it, and she didn't want to go through the X-ray machine. You know, the thing you stand in and hold your hands up.
She thought it was going to, like, steal her soul or something?
I think so. And so she had to be, like, taken aside and patted down.
Oh, boy.
And, but she was wearing so much stuff.
Yeah.
That, yeah, it was kind of funny. Hey, Craig, why don't we take whoever you are, Keith, why don't we take a break and pay some bills, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. We're broadcasting live from the New England International Auto Show, the Boston Auto Show, and there goes Chris Oxner. Nobody knows him except me, but I do. We'll be right back.
There's only one car that I need. It's Infinity Comfort and Infinity. American classic that I want to ride it. Ride around, ain't going to hide.
What a... And he sounded like he could have been a third yeah. Zangari brother. He's like, what a... What's your whole bent with General Motors? What do you got against them? And then I look at Paul.
How soon, Keith? Oh, be careful, my mic's not on, by the way. Or the brick link's not on. Okay. Our phone number is 617-770-3030. I think we have Mike in Hingham on the phone. Michael?
Hi, Todd.
Michael?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Can you hear me? I can. Electronics is amazing. Connected car. The reason I'm calling is one is to thank you. I was able to take my daughter, thanks to you, for the 25th year to the car show yesterday. We had a great time.
Did you buy her a car while you were here?
I didn't, but she, you know, she really liked the Mazdas. A question that she pointed out, which is really good, I think it was incredible, is have they spaced the car show in Boston in a bad time slot in the year? And the reason I asked that is she pointed out, she says, Dad, where's Mercedes, where's BMW, where's Porsche, where's Jaguar? They're not there. Are they getting squeezed out because of CES, the Detroit Auto Show in L.A.? I mean, there seem to be some big marks that we're missing there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a timing thing because the Detroit show is right before then, too. I was at the Detroit show, which is a tier one premier show, and BMW, Mercedes, Audi, Porsche, and Porsche's not always there, but none of those guys were there. They're going to move the Detroit show to June starting next year, which should open things up, and that'll sort of expose whether or not it was a timing issue.
Yeah.
I think it's an expended.
I think George is right. I think George is right on the money on that. I think it is, too often, and I think somewhat short-sighted, some of these car manufacturers look at return on investment and they just sometimes don't see it. But if they don't have, if Mercedes isn't here, Mercedes isn't in Detroit, and Mercedes might be in a limited capacity at CES, I think they're being a little bit short-sighted. And I had Lauren Fix on the show last week, and she talked about how even in Geneva, Mercedes used to have an entire floor. And they
be like the size of Texas.
Yeah, and now they had a very limited floor space at the Geneva Auto Show, where you would think they would be all over the place.
I think for these local shows like Boston, I think that Porsches of the world like don't want to be sharing floor space with people who are shopping for all the other brands. They don't want their shift knobs stolen.
The Northeast is a big demographic. I mean, I honestly think you're right. It's costing money, but you got CES, which John, that I've gone to for years.
Yeah.
Which is a one-third auto show now. And LA, which is now probably the premier auto show in the country. I'm going to argue that LA is the premier auto show in the country right now. I mean, they should go back to November when they had it before, but that's my feeling. Just wanted to point out, I want to thank you very much for the ticket.
Sure. One of the reasons they're this time frame is because this time frame was actually what was available. I mean, as weird as that sounds, when this show used to be at the Bayside Expo Center, they had that week, and that was either considered the last auto show of the season or the first auto show of the season.
Right.
So there was actually a fair amount of premieres that happened at that awful little Bayside Expo Center.
God, but
because it was kind of considered the first show of the season, so there might be some regional intros, there might be a North American intro here and there at Bayside. Then when they got kicked out of Bayside because a couple of things, it was too small.
And this place is fantastic.
And then they moved here. And this was when they went to the city of Boston. This is what the city of Boston said you could have, is the way I understand it. And from a financial point of view, and I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not, but the show at Bayside used to be 10 days. The show here is 5. For to be here for half as long, it costs twice as much.
Sure.
But they also get the foot traffic to justify. To satisfy all their needs within 3 to 4 days, which is impressive.
I was watching Barrett Jackson last night for a second, and there's a business, and they introduced him to a super there. They're actually going to sell number one today there, I think. So I didn't see any new introductions. I just think, as being a lifelong Bostonian, we get shortcut. After being to L.A. shows my whole life and stuff like that, I just think we get cut short here. And I'll free up the line and listen to what you have. Thank you very much again.
Okay.
It's always a great time. Let me give credit to the Boston Convention Center. What a nice setup. I mean, you sit there, you have a nice dinner right there, or lunch there. People come up and pick up the trays afterwards. It's spotless. I mean, they do a very, very nice job there at that show compared to the old one.
Yeah, like I said, the old one at Bayside, and George is a young guy. I don't know. Did you ever go to Bayside?
I used to go there when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I remember going to the World of Wheels once, too, and that was, I felt like I was just like in a filing's basement or something.
Building
19
with
cars.
Yeah, so where I live on the South Shore, it was actually kind of a quick little commute in to be able to get there, but it was, I guess... Part of me likes the nostalgia of Bayside. Now it's last time I drove by, it was a pile of bricks in the middle of something.
Yeah, I was using that parking lot to take photos.
Yeah, and I think Bayside actually was owned by the Mass Teachers Union.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, look, I think there's a possibility that the move for the Detroit show to June might avail the Boston show some more opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. One thing about this convention center is it has the ability to put in those A grade displays, the big beautiful displays,
right?
And because of that, we should get the big introductions, and Mike's right, we should get the
big. This place is like bigger than a Logan terminal,
right?
There's a whole RV show going on the other side of a partition.
Yeah.
And you know, you think this couldn't get any bigger? No, there's the exact same size space on the other side.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's pretty amazing.
We were actually at a dealer event last night, and we were trying to get to it, and we were on the RV side, and we walked up to the atrium up
yeah.
there. We ended up crashing like the RV reps party. Their food was a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, maybe you'll road test an RV one day.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I got to find something that that goes with the Buick Encore.
Bashing Buicks, come on, come on. I think we have another call. Good morning, Mary. Is that you, Mary?
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm president of the North Shore Irish Association, and we have a dance tonight that we want to cancel, and we're wondering if you could announce it for us.
I think you just did, Mary.
Did.
I think okay. you just did. You did it live on the air.
No, sir.
So where is it again?
It's at the Knights of Columbus in Melrose.
Okay.
With Erin's Melody, and so we're canceling because of the weather report.
Erin's Melody is great.
Yes, she is.
Yeah. That's,
they are, I should say.
They are, yeah. Yes.
Do you have a car question?
Thank you, Mary. We will pass that on, and we'll make sure Professor Sullivan knows it too.
Okay, great. Thanks so
okay.
much.
Okay, thanks, Mary.
Thank
bye
you.
Bye. Hey, you're Irish. Come on.
Yeah, you won't find me step dancing. I don't think.
No.
I don't have the legs for it.
Yeah.
So, what stuff did you see here that piqued your interest?
You know, it's. You know, I kind of look over stuff, and you know, there everybody likes performance cars, you know, and you know, everybody likes luxury cars. And if you're going to go look at a Bentley or something, I mean, they're
supercar, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're great, but I also look at kind of, you know, when I bought a new car in whenever it was, May.
What'd you buy?
Hyundai Santa Fe Sport.
Nice.
You know, and now, because I own it, I kind of use that to compare to, you know, other stuff, you know, and say...
Benchmark.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a really inexpensive car. It was, you know, I got the kind of base model, which is all I was really looking for. I was looking for dependability, long warranty,
and decent
gas
warranty.
Mileage.
Yeah.
You know, 22.5.
Wow.
And
look, they just redesigned it
yeah.
with a far more
right.
aggressive base. Conservative styling,
The new one has all the advanced driver assistance systems in it.
And CarPlay.
I would have liked the CarPlay. The ADAS systems in some of the Korean cars have not been that reliable.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not reliable. They've fallen off a lot.
Interesting.
I've
had the most issue with Volvo Sensus.
Okay.
And there's some cars that bake too many of the systems into the touchscreen.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I always think that a touchscreen should be augmented by real controls, like your volume
right.
and tuning
right.
knob.
Yeah. In fact, the new Honda Passport, they put a radio volume knob in.
How about
yeah.
that? Yeah. Yeah. And the funny thing is like they did that with the Civic too, but it's a tiny volume
yeah.
knob.
Like, yeah.
They begrudgingly were like,
yeah.
fine, I guess.
Yeah. No, it just seemed like the systems weren't working the way I wanted it to work, which is
was it delayed? Was it buggy?
It was a little bit buggy, but on the other hand, a couple other ones. I drove some model of Mercedes, and I don't remember what it was. And I just went to car in front of me went to go into a gas station. So I just slowed, went to zigzag around it, and the seatbelt sucked me back into the seat.
Oh, like it was doing like
a pre-crash.
So
yeah.
That's all these pre-collision systems
are not
designed for Boston drivers.
And sort of hurt
yeah.
when it happened.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
and really caught me by surprise. I remember driving a Chrysler 300, same sort of scenario. Someone starting to go around a corner. And they slowed a little bit. So what do? You just zigzag around and go around.
Yeah.
Slammed on the brakes.
And engaged the automatic
yeah.
braking.
Yeah.
yeah. And that's why I said that these systems are not designed for Boston
yeah.
drivers.
Yeah.
We're not jerks. We're aggressive and deliberate. Okay? We're deliberate.
Some people call us jerks.
So, but the thing is, like, all right, so like you said, when you see a gap, you got to go for
right.
it.
Right.
Somebody's poking out because
yeah.
people are creeping out.
Yeah.
You got to be able to get
right.
around it.
Right.
right. The other thing is the adaptive cruise control. It leaves too much room ahead of you.
Yeah.
And because Boston drivers, if we see a gap, we're hitting it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
which I just talked earlier in the show about, you know, bad weather's coming, leave lots of room. But yeah,
you can adjust the amount of space that adapter can control. But when you're at highway speeds and it leaves over a car length as the lowest setting, what's going to happen is you're going to be loading up a Pez dispenser.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be going there. Somebody's going to cut in front of you. It's going to push you back.
And I'm fine to do that myself. When I have a car with adaptive cruise control and I use it, my wife tells me to shut it off because it's too much of that kind of jerky-ish sort of...
I was talking to one automaker, I forget who, and they were saying that their adaptive cruise is getting better about being more natural.
Yeah.
It may have been Audi.
Yeah.
They're like I said, I'm driving this Kia K900. It's a luxurious car. It's got all these bells and whistles. And then I'm like, wow, you know, $60,000 or $64,000 for a luxury car. That is, you get a lot. What am I missing that I'm not getting in a real...
$100,000 car. Right. Yeah.
I go sit in the Audi A8 and I'm like, aha, that's the $30,000 difference. There is, you know, everything is just more... There's just that little je ne sais quoi, right? Everything's baked away. And it's been a more elegant...
Fashion. I was going to say more better. But, you know, is it really... You know, is the difference between the K900 and an Audi A8 the difference of adding a Subaru Outback as an additional car in that mix? You know, okay, I bought the K900. I have $30,000 left, so I'm going to buy an Outback too. Now I have two cars for the price of an A8.
Never thought of it that way.
Yeah. So, you know, you look at that and you go, is it really a whole car difference? It's nicer.
I would say this. When it comes to these luxury brands, there is something so holistic about their approach to luxury. Like, for the K900 and, you know, I mean, there's the new Genesis G9.
Yeah.
Also a very nice car.
Very nice car.
Starts to go in that direction of holistic approach to luxury, where everything down to, like, you know, you said, like, fasteners, quality fasteners, right? Everything from, like, the stitching, the seat comfort, to, you know, how elegantly the controls are sort of baked into it. So it's no longer, like, controls are here. They're also done in a way that's almost like seamless.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's the $30,000 difference, but it's a significant.
There's a difference, but I think, you know, I look back at what was the Volkswagen had, the Phaeton, which was basically an A8.
Yeah,
and that was sort of the Volkswagen for people that didn't want to say I own an Audi because they didn't want to show off quite as much.
Yeah.
And that was a car that on the used car market was the best deal around. You could buy those cars 2 years old
but
for almost nothing. I know.
People
figured it out. Figured it out.
You used to be able to do a European delivery of that car, too.
Oh, okay.
So if you're in the market for, like, a Porsche, anybody out there, you can check European delivery. You fly out to Germany. They put you up in a hotel right near Stuttgart for the night. You go to the track for the day. You go to see the cars. You go to the assembly line. You go see your car built. And at the very end of the day... You'll have, like, some, you know, schnitzel or something like that. At the very end of the day, you're presented with your car, your 911, your Boxster.
Yeah.
I don't know if they do European delivery for Boxster, but
probably not.
Then you go bombing around Europe, and then you ship it back. And there's some crazy way in which it doesn't cost them. It, like, saves them money. It might be, like, exchange rate. So, like, it's a no cost option in some cases.
Yeah. No, that's one of those things. And I've only talked to one person who did that, and they actually did it back when Volvo was doing it. And they went to Sweden, they got to see their car being built, they drove around Sweden for like a week, and they said the amount of savings between doing it that way and buying the car here paid for the trip.
And I was always curious about the financials of that.
Now I'm not sure, you know, how it all works out, but it's an interesting concept. Well, I'm starting to see kids coming in and teachers coming in. This event here is the Massachusetts Auto Dealers Association Student Skills Competition.
And what are they
so doing? These are kids that have taken a written test and they've gotten to this point. I think there's going to be 26 kids in total, so I think they're teams of two, and they're going to actually work on some of the stations that are set up, like next to us here, there's an electronic station. A little further down, Sullivan Tire has a brake station set up. A little further down, Subaru has
an intake manifold
down there
somewhere. Yeah,
Subaru has an engine over there. But so they'll go around and they'll test. And then there's two Toyotas down there, and the Toyotas are courtesy of the Toyota region, and I recognized Dave from Copeland Toyota in Brockton here, and they're going to actually, the kids are going to have to do some sort of work to those vehicles.
Oh, very cool.
And at the end, whoever the winner is, the winning team is, will go to New York for the Greater New York Auto Dealers Association show, which I haven't been in a while, but it used to take place during the press days of the auto show. Now I think it's during the actual.
I was curious if it was going to be during
I believe it's during the regular public days.
So is this done in conjunction with any of the trade schools or?
Yeah. This is the Voc-Tech schools. Most of the Voc-Tech schools. Mm-hmm. And what happened was there was three big Super Bowl events for auto kids. There's something called Skills USA, used to be VICA, sort of similar to this, and the winning team goes to Tennessee or someplace, competes again. There was the AAA Ford competition, which I ran forever, and the winning team would go to Detroit, compete again, and there was, even on the local level, we would go to people like Sullivan Tire and say, hey, can you donate something? And right. Sullivan Tire was great. Sullivan Tire gave us, you know, air wrenches and tool sets and all kinds of stuff.
Nice.
So we had one kid, one team that won, and they were from pick someplace where, you know, kind of out in the country.
North Adams.
Yeah, something like that. And this kid opens up his winning bag. And there's a half-inch drive air wrench. There's a 3/8 drive air wrench. There's, partial paid scholarships to school.
Fantastic.
And the kid cried because he was I don't own anything like this. I've never seen it. And the teacher comes over to me and says, you know, this kid's family is really, you know, struggling. And he said, you know, this kid's never even been on a plane before. So this is going to be a whole new experience. And he, because of a contest like this, he just had the time of his life and just, you know, came away with, you know, this is fantastic sort of stuff.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of what happens here. So these kids are going to go out to New York, and I don't know what they win at that level, but I'm sure it's pretty interesting.
I mean, I see bagels over there.
So that's surprising. And that's, you know, it was funny. It was even, you know, every once in a while with the Ford AAA contest, we would have a school call me up and say, you know, I don't really think my kids are ready, and I said, have them show up, have them compete.
Yeah.
The worst that's going to happen, they're going to get a shirt, a hat, and a jacket.
Yeah.
And some sort of prize. So I said, you know, everybody has, and we had 10 two-person teams. And I said, everybody has to come in, somebody has to come in last. I said, are they going to come in last because they weren't skilled enough? Did they get nervous, whatever? But I said, they're still going to compete. And they still get
to learn something today, too.
Yeah, and they still get to put it on their resume that says, I competed in the Ford AAA Auto Skills.
Absolutely.
Because it happened for so long, service managers at dealerships competed in the Ford AAA Auto Skills.
Oh, that's so
funny. So it's like, oh, yeah, I remember doing that.
Well, look, I was talking to somebody at the dealer night last night who does a lot of the service stuff, and they were saying that first of all, they have a dearth of technicians. They have a need for technicians right now. And those are good-paying jobs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was very fortunate that my parents were able to put me through college, 4-year school, you know, but I think for a lot of people, a 2-year tech school is a great opportunity. You don't go into student debt, and you could be running your own shop.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is that there's a lot of people who are trained just to fix the Honda,
right?
They go in, they go to WyoTech for 2 years, and they come out and they're plugging into a laptop of the ODP2. Here, you know, I see, you know, these are kids working on a bunch of different things.
Right.
To have those more agnostic skills.
Yeah. Within a mile of my house, there's two used car lots and an independent shop with a help wanted sign up.
Yeah.
I think it's some Ford dealership that's been advertised on the radio. $10,000 signing bonus.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're a technician, you go to work there, you make it 30 days and you're still working, they hand you a check for $10,000.
Oh my gosh, I should tell my buddy Jim and we'll split the fee.
I mean, it's just, you know, you look at that, and it's a and it seems to be a, you know, 8 to 5:30 kind of Monday through Friday job.
Yeah.
So you look at that and you go, you know, that's the possibilities that they have right now. And the guy who's sort of running this contest is Howie Ferris. And Howie Ferris, for as long as I've known him until a few years ago when he retired, ran the automotive program at Mass Bay Community College.
Really?
So, you know, you look at programs like that and you say, okay, here's a state school, so reasonable tuition,
mm-hmm.
local, bounce back and forth between Wellesley and their campus in Ashland.
Okay.
Right next to where Chambers has a big body shop. And so you get sort of some great education. You come out with your associate's degree. So if you decide, get an associate's degree,
yeah.
And you get a potential. You know, I was talking to a dealership owner one day, and I was talking to a body shop owner for that matter. And they said, good tech in either place can make $100,000. So
wow,
pretty good money.
That's awesome.
Hey, I bet Paul Sullivan's somewhere in the studio there.
I am. Hello.
You are.
Hello,
Jeff. Hello, Mr. Sullivan. Yes.
Hey.
Yes. Did you hear the no dance announcement tonight?
No.
From Mary?
Oh.
Mary says,
that doesn't surprise me. I'll become informed on that. Yeah.
Yes.
It's wintertime.
It's wintertime, yeah. Yeah.
And we're going to get some snow, but you're not.
Well, no. I'm in Boston.
Oh, I thought you were in Florida.
No. That's that's next week.
I got the wrong info.
That's Dennis.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, Dennis is in Florida.
Oh, see, I'm just a confused old guy.
Dennis can just go wherever he wants.
Yeah.
Whenever he wants.
Yeah.
So you're in Boston. Okay, well, you have to suffer then.
I'll be shoveling snow tomorrow. Don't worry.
Yep. Me too.
Yeah. So what do you got going on for the Irish Hit Parade today?
It's music to wait for the snowstorm.
Ah.
Is there a particular band that is good, or a particular Irish singer that's good for that? Or?
Yeah, the Get Out of Town Quick Caleb band. Yeah.
Everyone
can do for picking up bread and milk.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Gotta get the bread and milk. Everyone can do their Irish dancing inside.
Yeah, what do people do with bread and milk?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
It's going to be there on
French
Monday.
Toast.
That's all I know.
Yeah.
French
toast.
I know.
Yeah. I know.
Make bread nice and soggy.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, so the very best in Irish music coming up in just a minute or two.
No, I'm calling it all. You're going to have to stick around. I have to go get some bread and milk. So,
do you? Okay.
All right.
All right. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Or I could just pick it up for you on the way in.
All right, good. Thank you.
All right. Hey, that music means I have to go. Next week, I will be broadcasting from WRL's Southern Studio. Okay, my kitchen table down in Florida. But Dennis will be back on the board. Thank you to Keith Foster for running the board, and the very best in Irish music coming up with Paul Sullivan and the Irish Hit Parade. Till next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car.
Bye-bye.